her son, and most recently, Han, her husband. It seemed that everything she loved had been torn away from her to cause the most pain. She had endured it all, with little time to grieve. But how much could one person suffer? She needed her twin, now more than ever. She needed someone with whom she could talk and share her pain. Luke would understand. Leia let the emotion pass through her. Many more beings had endured far worse catastrophes. She had to remain strong. The members of the Resistance were looking up to her, not her brother, to lead them in their struggle for freedom. They had answered the call to join her, and she could not abandon them. The safety of hyperspace broke apart into lines. Then the viewport showed a dark void, speckled with stars. General Leia Organa strode out of her cabin and headed to the bridge. Poe came out from his quarters, his old flight jacket over an arm. BB-8 rolled beside him, Finn a step behind, putting on the shirt and trousers that Poe had lent him. Poe had gotten Finn up to speed on everything that had happened, but Finn had a million more questions.
"So you blew up the Starkiller base? Rey beat Kylo? The Resistance got the map? You won, right? Why does this not feel like winning?"
Poe led the way down the corridor toward the bridge.
"We came out of hiding to attack Starkiller. It didn't take the First Order long to find our base." "Look, Poe, I believe in what you guys are doing, but..."
The former stormtrooper hesitated.
"I didn't join this army. I followed Rey here. I just don't want you thinking I'm something I'm not."
Poe tried to reassure his friend with a smile.
"It's gonna be all right. Don't worry. You're with us where you belong."
He stopped and gave Finn his flight jacket. Finn had saved it from the TIE fighter crash on Jakku, and when they met again on Dukar, Poe had told him to keep it. But when Finn was admitted to the med center, the jacket came back into Poe's possession. Hoping his friend would recover, Poe had tried to mend it as best he could, stitching combat patches over the tears and burn marks from Kylo Ren's lightsaber.
"I'm not much of a sewer. Plus, I was, you know, saving the fleet."
Finn didn't seem as eager to accept the jacket as he had on Dukar. Poe understood his wariness. Finn was still recuperating from nearly being killed. It might take him a while, but he'd eventually come around. He was a soldier, and soldiers never gave up the fight. They rounded the corner and walked onto the bridge, where General Organa was inspecting a holographic star chart with Admiral Akbar, Commander Dacey, and other Resistance officers. When Poe went up to her, she welcomed him with a slap to the face.
"You're demoted."
Poe grimaced. He'd expected a reprimand, but never losing his rank.
"For what? A successful run? We took out a dreadnought.
At what cost?"
"Pull your head out of your cockpit."
She began to turn away from him. Poe felt the need to defend himself.
"You start an attack, you carry it through. There are things you can't solve by jumping in an X-wing and blowing something up. I need you to learn that." "There were heroes on that mission," he said.
"Dead heroes," General Organa said.
"No leaders."
She was a small woman, yet her words landed with tremendous force. He felt ashamed he had failed her, and any further explanation would be nothing more than an excuse. During their argument, Finn had been studying the holographic star chart above the command table. Their present location appeared empty of stars and celestial bodies.
"We're really nowhere. Deep space," he said. "How's Rey going to find us?"
General Organa pulled back her sleeve and revealed a black corded bracelet adorned with a spherical metal device. It shone faintly.
"A cloaked binary beacon?"
Finn asked. The general smiled.
"To light her way home."
Finn returned to the map.
"So, until she gets back, what's the plan?"
"We need to find a new base," the general said. "One with enough power to get a distress signal to our allies scattered in the outer rim," suggested Dacey.
A career military officer, the tough-as-nails commander had seen her fair share of battles over the years.
And most important, we need to get there undetected, General Organa added.
Emergency lights suddenly flashed. Sirens began to sound.
A proximity alert!
Akbar shouted. Poe couldn't stay quiet any longer.
That can't be!
In the large viewport around the bridge, 30 First Order Star Destroyers emerged from hyperspace. One dwarfed them all. A thunderhead of a vessel. Veins of illumination ran along the kilometers of its surface to a central command area the size of a major metropolis. And it was armed with giant turbolaser cannons from bow to stern on both sides. It was Supreme Leader Snoke's flagship, the Mega Destroyer Supremacy.
You've got to be kidding me, Poe said.
It made no sense that the First Order had found them so quickly.
Can we jump to light speed?
Lieutenant Connex checked her readouts. We have enough fuel for just one jump.
Do it fast. We have to get out of here, Poe said,
watching the squadrons of TIE fighters launch from the destroyers. If the Resistance fleet didn't jump soon, it would be swarmed.
Wait, General Organa stared at the warships. They tracked us through hyperspace.
That's impossible, Poe said.
Yes, it is, the General said. And they've done it.
Poe didn't argue. Her explanation seemed to be the only possibility. First Order engineers had built the Starkiller superweapon, so it was conceivable they could invent a tracking device that transmitted through hyperspace. Finn offered his own assessment.
So if we jump to light speed, they'll just find us again and we'll be out of fuel. We're trapped. They've got us.
Not yet, they don't.
Poe turned to General Organa.
Permission to jump in an X-Wing and blow something up?
She didn't hesitate.
Granted. Admiral, swing us around.
Cannon fire from the Mega Destroyer rattled everyone on the bridge. Akbar leaned a webbed hand on a console to maintain his balance.
Full astern! Rotate shields!
Poe ran off the bridge, Finn a few steps behind him. More shots rocked the cruiser. The pattern of the blasts told Poe that some of the TIEs were already on them. BB-8 wheeled ahead of them, squealing that they needed to go faster.
Don't wait for me, Poe told BB-8. Get in and fire her up.
Poe followed the droid into the hangar. Tally and the other pilots sat in the cockpits of their starfighters and prepared for launch. The launch never happened. Torpedoes from a First Order TIE fighter shot into the hangar and detonated. In the blink of an eye, fuel lines burst and the place erupted. Flames consumed every craft, from the A-wings to Poe's beloved Black One. Tally was in her cockpit when it blew apart. The force of the blast saved Poe and BB-8 from suffering the terrible fate of their comrades. Both were sent reeling backward into the corridor. BB-8's dome flew off the ball of his body, but he was able to activate his magnetic casters to reconnect it. The blast doors shut, sealing off the hangar to prevent the fire from spreading. Finn dashed toward them.
Poe, are you all right?
Poe took his friend's hand and staggered to his feet.
We need to get out of range of the Star Destroyers.
The Resistance would not survive otherwise. Chapter 6. Veering away from the Raddus in his TIE silencer, Kylo Ren watched his torpedoes tear open the cruiser's hangar and decimate the starfighters within. The brilliance of the explosions dazzled him. But he was not done. He wanted to take out more than a hangar full of starfighters. He wanted to eliminate the Resistance's leaders. Ren looped his fighter around for another attack run, and the two black and red TIEs behind him did the same. Fast though they were, they struggled to keep up, for Ren had followed the example of his grandfather, Darth Vader, and flew a custom TIE. The silencer bore a sleek, sinister design with an oblong cockpit, a squashed rectangular viewport, and two solar wings that were notched and slanted like those on an interceptor. It tore through space with unrivaled speed and packed weaponry as devastating as the Special Forces TIEs flying with it. Closing in on the cruiser's bridge, Ren waited for a torpedo lock. Since he had annihilated the cruiser's starfighters in the hangar, He needn't worry about any A-wings or X-wings harassing him. And the turbo lasers on the First Order's destroyers were keeping the cruiser busy. The targeting computer beeped. His fingers twitched, ready to fire, until a sensation in the Force made him hesitate. On that bridge stood someone once close to him, as close as anyone could or ever would be. A person who shared his stubbornness, tenacity, and defiance. His mother. He felt that Leia, or General Organa as her minions in the Resistance called her, sensed him too. She held no anger against him, despite what he had done, despite that he had killed his father and her husband. For some reason, she still cared for him, as if he hadn't changed, as if he were still Ben Solo, her son. How dare she? His anger fused into an emotional missile. He launched it at her through the Force, a bolt of pure rage. He felt her stagger back, and it gave him joy. He wanted her to know his pain. He wasn't Ben Solo. He was Kylo Ren, and he would sever his bond with her once and for all. But he didn't press the trigger. Something blocked him at the last moment. Some twinge of guilt or deep-seated fear. Nothing stopped the other TIE pilots from firing. A pair of Magpulse warheads struck the cruiser's bridge, and Ren felt a chorus of voices crying out in the Force before they went quiet. Ren jerked his flight yoke, rolling his silencer to avoid the debris. His breathing was strained. He might not have personally killed his parent this time, but the bond had been severed, nonetheless. He no longer felt his mother. General Hux addressed him on the comm.
The Resistance has pulled out of range of our destroyers. We can't cover you at this distance. Return to the fleet!
Ren's anger flared again.
No!
He snapped back. It would be folly to retreat when a couple more well-placed shots could destroy the cruiser. Other TIE squadrons had downed the cargo hauler Vigil. They could eradicate the fleet right here, right now. Wounded though it might be, the Raddus wasn't going down without a fight. Its turbo lasers nailed one of the TIEs flying beside Ren, blowing it to pieces.
Snoke's command,
Hux said on the comm.
They won't last long burning fuel like this. It's just a matter of time.
The cruiser's guns erased a second TIE from Ren's scopes. If he continued the assault without the destroyer's protection, he and his squadron could all die. Then, victory would be pointless. He turned his silencer away from the cruiser and commanded the TIEs to do the same. In a flash of light, Admiral Akbar, the most esteemed military commander of his generation, was gone. Akbar's number two, Captain Gawat, went with him, as did the rest of the bridge crew on the Raddus. Either they were vaporized in the explosion, or sucked out into the vacuum of space. Only Leia survived. She drifted, arms spread, between burning fragments of the bridge. Her training in the Force allowed her to slow her breathing and retain some of her heat, but she would not last out here forever. She was being suffocated, deprived of oxygen. Soon, she would join the rest. Several TIEs and a fighter in the shape of a claw flew past the debris back toward the fleet of Star Destroyers. Her son had piloted that fighter, her wayward, vicious, vengeful son. Corrupted by Snoke, Ben had committed the most reprehensible acts of violence against the most innocent among them, and Leia felt responsible. All her life she had worked to guard the galaxy from evil, but she could not protect it from the evils of her own child. And yet still, she loved him. She would have done anything to see Ben again, as Han had, if only for a moment. The stars blurred. A chill bit into her bones. She readied herself for the end. A light floated in front of her. Circular in shape, like a micro-sized moon. It was her beacon. The bracelet had come loose from her wrist. She took hold of it. Its soft light reminded her of Ray. The beacon needed to be returned to the cruiser, else the girl might never find the resistance to bring Luke back. And then every last hope would be extinguished. Leia shut her eyes and dropped her head to her chest. She forgot about the cold in her bones and even her breath. Her sole focus was the Force. She rode its currents back into the hole in the cruiser bridge. Finn pushed himself up, groggy from the fall. The First Order attack had knocked him off his feet and into a bulkhead. He'd been chasing after Poe, but with the corridor branching ahead, he couldn't tell which direction Poe had gone. Rounding the bend, he skidded to a halt. Crew were crowded around an open airlock where droids were carrying out a stretcher.
"Her life signs are weak, but she's fighting," a medic reported.
Poe stood among the crew, gesturing frantically.
"Move back! Give room!"
Finn stepped to the side to let the stretcher pass. On it lay none other than General Leia Organa. An object dropped from her hand and fell near Finn's feet. No one else noticed, so Finn picked it up. It was the wrist beacon that the general had showed him on the bridge. He moved away from the crowd and examined the glowing beacon. Somewhere out in the wide galaxy, Ray had one too. Chapter 7. The island was haunted. Ray was sure of it. She stood outside Luke's hut and watched the fog roll across the village. The haze was thick and held an eerie pre-dawn glow. She had the vague impression that something lurked within those mists. Specters, whispering secrets from a long-lost time.
"Stay here. I'll come back for you, sweetheart. I promise."
The voice startled her. Those words were the same she had heard so many times in her dreams on Jakku. Yet this was not Jakku, and looking around, she saw she stood alone. Shortly before sunrise, the fog dissipated, and Luke emerged from his hut. He strode past Rey as if she weren't there. Strapped to his back was a rucksack, a staff, netting, and an assortment of other items. She didn't ask where he was going. She just followed. She trailed him up the mountain, then down the other side to the shore where a blubbery, bovine creature lounged on the rocks. Luke climbed up to it and untied an empty bottle from his back. He then took the two teats that hung beneath the creature's stomach and milked them. A green fluid oozed into the bottle. The creature turned its leathery neck to Ray. Above a tubular snout, two tiny black eyes peered at her. The milking seemed to comfort it. After filling the bottle, Luke put it to his lips and drank. Green liquid dribbled from the bottle into his beard. He didn't wipe the slime away, nor did he offer a sip of the milk to Ray. She wouldn't have accepted anyway. Once refreshed, he capped the bottle and returned to his hut, closing the door behind him. Ray sat on a bench outside. She reached into her satchel, shifting aside the beacon Leia had given her to take out a ration packet. It was a leftover quarter portion she'd traded with the disgusting Unkar Plutt for scrap metal on Jakku. The food tasted bland, but at least it was better than green milk. After she was finished, she put on her cloak and slept. Before dawn the next day, Luke came out, again outfitted for travel. Ray followed him to the edge of a cliff. The bay below was calm, though on the horizon loomed a storm. Luke grabbed a wooden pole that rested against the ledge. Long and thin, it extended all the way down into the water. Luke tested its strength, then, to Ray's astonishment, used it as a lever to vault himself over the bay. After landing atop the cliff on the other side, he pulled the pole out of the shallows. Its end bore a sharp metal hook. Ray watched as Luke surveyed the waters. Without warning, he shoved the spear back into the sea. When he lifted the pole again, a fish bigger than Ray was hooked on its end. Luke shifted the pole to the rocky beach, where the fish flapped, its mouth tendrils wiggling. He leaned the pole against the ledge and walked down a path to the beach. Ray found a similar trail on her side of the cliff. By the time she reached the fish, the storm had hit. Rain pummeled her, and the wind shrilled. It was so harsh, she threw on the hood of her cloak. She'd worn the garment only for Jakku's sandstorms, never once thinking she'd don it for rain. The inclement weather appeared to refresh Luke. He hoisted the giant fish over his shoulders and hiked up the path Ray had taken down. As he had before, he ignored Ray. But she trudged after him through the driving rain, hood up, staff in hand. Ray stayed outside the hut that night. She was drenched, her teeth chattering from the cold. She got barely a wink of sleep. When Luke emerged from his hut that morning, she stayed on the log. Her tired body wanted to keep resting. As he walked past her, he paused. It wasn't for long, but it was enough. She found the strength to get up and stumbled after him. Her strength flagged as they climbed a crumbling staircase. Slick stone made the going treacherous. One slip, and she'd fall off the cliff to smash on the rocks below. When they neared the top of the staircase, the whispers began to speak to her again. The morning haze had lifted, revealing the shrubbery and moss that greened the cliffside. No wind blew. Yet the whispers grew louder. They said nothing comprehensible, no promise as before, perhaps nothing at all. Was she hearing voices in her head? She climbed a few more steps before she saw the tree. It was a fortress of nature. Three pulpy offshoots stood guard around a gigantic central trunk. All had tops splintered like jagged crowns, and none bore foliage or branches. Only moss grew on the ashen bark. A wide gap in the trunk looked to be a portal into the tree. Ray moved toward the gap. The whispers rose in volume, clearly emanating from the tree. She had seen the tree before, somewhere. Had it been in her dreams? Or in the vision that had come to her when she'd touched Luke's lightsaber in Maz Kanata's castle? She couldn't be sure. Those memories were muddled in her mind. It was hard to remember what was real and what wasn't. She heard Luke stop behind her, but she did not glance back at him. She ducked through the gap and entered the tree. The interior of the trunk had been hollowed out into a chamber. Strips of bark plastered the walls in intricate designs. There was no sign of rot, despite the damp conditions outside. A strange illumination drew her focus. In an alcove, surrounded by a sunburst pattern of bark, rested a shelf of dusty books. They seemed to shine with a light of their own. The whispers became a hum, not of voices, but of energy. The books called to her. She stepped closer to them. They weren't everyday data pads or electronic binders, but leather-bound tomes of flimsy and paper, like the journals she had kept on Jakku. She reached for one.
"Who are you?"
She turned at the sound of Luke's voice. He stood in the doorway, regarding her as if for the first time. Fleeting memories guided her words.
"I know this place," she said. "This is a library."
Luke came forward.
"Built 1,000 generations ago, to keep the original Jedi texts, the foundation of the ancient faith."
He removed a book from the shelf and opened it.
"They were the first, and now, just like me, they are the last of the Jedi religion."
The elaborate runes that decorated the book's pages captivated Rey. They were mysterious and yet familiar at the same time.
"You know this place," Luke said. "You've seen these books. You've seen this island."
"Only in dreams," Ray said.
Luke narrowed his eyes at her.
"Who are you?"
It was the question she'd often asked herself. All she could say for certain was the purpose for her visit to Octo. The Resistance sent me.
If they sent you, what's special about you? Jedi lineage? Royalty?
She wished she was special, or a Jedi, or royalty. Maybe then he would listen to her. But she didn't dare reveal what she actually was.
An orphan,
Luke said, reading into her silence.
Where are you from?
Nowhere.
No one's from nowhere.
She sighed. Jakku. A hint of a smile tugged the corners of his mouth.
All right, that is pretty much nowhere. Why are you here, Rey from nowhere?
The Resistance sent me. We need your help. The First Order... Luke's smile vanished.
Why are you here?
Rey diverted her eyes. She knew what he meant. There was a reason Leia had sent her and not Poe Dameron or someone more qualified for secret missions. Leia had recognized Rey's extraordinary gifts. Something inside me has always been there, but now it's... She paused, grasping for the right word. Awake. And I'm afraid. I don't know what it is or what to do, and I need help. I need someone to show me my place in all of this.
You want a teacher?
For a moment, her hopes returned, but, like a spark, they fizzled out when Luke spoke again.
I can't teach you.
Why not? I've seen your daily routine. You're not busy.
I'll never teach another generation of Jedi, he said.
She shook her head. This was Luke Skywalker, the icon of the Rebellion, who had defeated Death Stars and the Emperor and had single-handedly resurrected the Jedi Order from its ashes. How could he give up on what he had spent the greater part of his life building? Luke stepped back to the doorway and leaned a hand against the trunk.
You asked why I came here? I came to this island to die, and to make sure the Jedi Order dies with me.
He stared out at the island, then looked back at her.
I know only one truth,
he said. Conviction knit his brow.
It's time for all of this to end.
His defeatism startled her. Why?
You can't understand.
Make me. Leia sent me here with the hope you'd return. If she was wrong, she deserves to know why. We all do. Luke responded by walking out of the library, leaving her alone. Sadly, she had been right. The island was haunted. The great Luke Skywalker, master of the Jedi, was but a ghost of the hero he once had been. Finn slumped down in a corridor on the Raddus. Crew rushed past, occasionally glancing at him as if he should be doing something. But what could he do? The cruiser had lost its starfighters, so there was no need for his rather poor gunnery skills. And he knew nothing about repairing starships. The First Order had trained him to excel on the battlefield, not in engineering. The beacon he held continued to emit its warm glow. Did the light mean that Rey was still alive? General Organa hadn't explained the details. All Finn knew was that the beacon would lead Rey back to the cruiser, and right now, that was too risky with the First Order on their tail. She'd likely be captured or killed. Even if Skywalker returned with her, Finn doubted that anyone, Jedi or not, could survive an attack from 30 Star Destroyers. Everything seemed doomed, and all he could do was stare at the floor. BB-8 roamed the hallway, halting before Finn. The droid bobbed his dome to the right and left, looking at Finn and beeping in concern, but Finn didn't lift his head. He wasn't in the mood for a pep talk, especially from this particular astromech. He was about to tell BB-8 to scram when the droid's projector switched on, and a holographic recording flickered before him. In the Resistance's medical center on Dukar, Rey stood over Finn as he lay in a coma. She looked at him for some time, then leaned over his recovery pod and kissed his forehead.
We'll see each other again. I believe that, she said. Thank you, my friend.
The hologram vanished.
Dust motes floated in Ray's place. A few moments passed before Finn's heart settled down.
Kinda weird you recorded that, but...
His gaze fell to the beacon in his grasp. It seemed to shine brighter than before.
Thank you,
he told BB-8.
I know what I've got to do.
The droid burbled, then rolled away. Finn didn't putter around either. He got to his feet and rushed down the corridor. If it was too dangerous for Ray to come to them, he would find a way to go to her. Luke's meditation that evening took him into his memories, to a time prior to his attempt to restore the Jedi Order. He had been a young man, little more than 20 years old, when on Dagobah he happened upon another tree that held secrets. It emanated an energy that Luke had not felt before, like a chill in the Force. A domain of evil it was, or so said his master at the time.
What's in there?
Luke asked.
Only what you take with you,
his master said. As Luke stepped toward the tree, his master remarked that his weapons weren't needed. Luke took them anyway. The bole of the tree led him down into a cave, cold and slimy and smelling of death. Snakes, lizards, and other scaly creatures slithered between the branches and vines. He trod past them, carefully going deeper into the cave. And then, out of the darkness emerged a figure armored all in black, the killer of both his first teacher, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and allegedly his father, Anakin Skywalker, the villain known as Darth Vader. Luke ignited his lightsaber first. Vader followed with his, red against Luke's blue. The Dark Lord spared no words in that fight, and Luke never forgot the sound of Vader's mechanical respiration. Luke won the duel by landing a furious blow to Vader's helmet. When the helmet fell from Vader's body and rolled in the muck, its mask exploded, revealing a face underneath. A face that was none other than Luke's. Soon after their encounter in the cave, Luke had fought Vader again, not as a phantom, but in the flesh in Cloud City. There, the Dark Lord had uttered words behind his rasping breaths, providing an answer to the mystery of the cave. He revealed he had not murdered Luke's father as Obi-Wan had told Luke. He was Luke's father. Luke had screamed in denial. No, no, it couldn't be true. It was impossible. Yet it was possible, and it was true. It was a secret he had taken with him into the cave. A secret that had revealed itself when he saw his own face in Vader's helmet. A secret about his father that he had somehow always known, even if it had been withheld from him growing up. Kids know. Rey also knew the secret of her parents, if she would admit it. But she had buried her secrets deep and walled herself against them. It was as if she feared such secrets could destroy her. Luke could not teach someone as guarded as her. He had tried to do so before, and he had failed. Chapter 8 Paige's death hit Rose hard. The young technician took refuge in a utility corridor on the Radis. The initial shock she'd felt learning what had befallen Paige's bomber had spiraled into grief. Her older sister meant everything to her. Paige was the person Rose had admired since her first memory. The two had spent their childhoods together, suffering through the First Order's brutal takeover of the mining colony where they grew up, looking out for each other in those dark hours, yet also trading joys and laughs and secrets only sisters could share. Rose sniffled and stared at the old phase band ring that the bomber squadron commander, a stout, silvery martigrade named Fossil, had given her to honor her sister's sacrifice. What looked like an ornate ring could, by the switch of a tiny lever, iris open to reveal the starboard crest of the Rebel Alliance. During the rule of the Empire, senators had worn rings such as this to hide their loyalty to the rebellion. The historical significance of this gift would have deeply affected Paige. But history and politics were least on Rose's mind. She could only think of Paige. How she would never hug her sister again when she returned from a mission. How the two of them would never adopt a pet together, or get to ride a Pomeranian prancer or a fleet-footed fathier. How they would never talk. Just talk. Like they could for hours, sometimes about what was going on, sometimes about nothing at all. Rose touched the only other piece of jewelry she owned, a medallion of Haitian smelt that hung from a necklace. It was the shape of a half-crescent and engraved with the emblem of her home. Paige had worn a medallion just like it. Their matched pair represented the double planet system of Automuk, containing Haze Major and Haze Minor, their homeworld. It also signified the closest of bonds between Rose and her older sister. They were like planets orbiting each other. Except that now they weren't. Now, one of the planets was gone. The echo of footsteps told Rose that someone was near. But who else would come down here? All the other engineers were engaged in repairs elsewhere on the cruiser. Rose wiped away her tears with her sleeve and stood. She tiptoed to the corner and peeked around it, spying a young man in a patched-up flight jacket. He opened the hatch of an escape pod and threw the sack he carried inside. "What are you doing here?" she asked. At the sound of her voice, the young man knocked his head against the hatch. He turned, pretending it didn't happen. "Hi, I was, just doing a..." "No, what are you doing here, down in maintenance?" Rose moved a little closer. She recognized him from somewhere. "You're... Finn!" she blushed. She should have identified him at first sight. Anyone who followed galactic events knew who this young man was. "The Finn!"
"The Finn?" he repeated.
"I'm sorry for being an idiot. It's just... I'm not an idiot. I work behind pipes all day, and talking with Resistance Heroes is not my forte, and... Oh, I'm Rose, and..."
"Breathe," he said.
It was exactly what Paige would have said. Rose quit talking and breathed. It calmed her down, but she felt even more embarrassed. She had the tendency to jabber on like an excited astromech.
"I'm not a Resistance hero," Finn said, "but it was nice meeting you. Rose?"
He stood in the threshold of the escape pod, looking at her. He wanted her to leave. "Okay," she said. She retreated into the utility corridor. If only she could tell her sister! Finn was so charming and courageous and... She turned back into the hallway, just as he was about to duck into the pod. "But you are a hero, and that's important. You left the First Order, and what you did on Starkiller Base?"
"Listen,"
Rose talked over him. "When we heard about it, Paige, that's my sister, said, 'Rose, that's a real hero. Know right from wrong, and don't run away when it gets hard.'" She took another breath, glad to get it all out.
"Sure,"
was all Finn said in reply. His nervousness perplexed her, though it was also possible he was just taken aback. She had that effect on people. "You know, just this morning I've had to stun 3 people trying to jump ship in these escape pods, running away." She pulled out her electroshock prod and waved it around to demonstrate. Finn leaned away and frowned.
"That's terrible."
"I know. Anyway..." Her excitement began to wane as she reconsidered the situation. Why was someone of his stature in maintenance? Shouldn't he be advising the other officers?
"Well, I should get back to,"
he said, fidgeting.
"What I was doing."
"What were you doing?"
"Checking? Just checking the, doing a check?"
he stuttered. She glanced past him into the pod at the sack he'd tossed inside. "Checking the escape pods," Finn nodded.
"Routine check."
"By boarding one? With a packed bag?" she asked.
"Okay, listen."
His hemming and hawing didn't sound like what a hero would say. He sounded like a deserter. Rose jabbed her electroshock prod at him. Its high-voltage discharge could fuse broken circuits and shock a human deaf and dumb. It sent Finn tumbling into the wall. Poe and the surviving members of the Resistance leadership sat in the tight space of the Radice's emergency bridge. Commander Dacey, who had been on an errand when the attack destroyed the main bridge, addressed the assembled. "General Organa, Leia," she said, with reverence, "is unconscious but recovering. That's the only good news I have. Admiral Akbar, the rest of our leadership, they're gone. Leia was the sole survivor on the bridge." Standing near Poe, C-3PO sounded like he was caught in a loop.
"Oh dear, oh dear."
"If she were here," Dacey said, "she'd say save your sorrow for after the fight. To that end, she left clear instructions as to who should take her place. Someone she's always trusted, who has her full confidence." Poe straightened in anticipation. Though they had their differences, Leia had always recognized his dedication to the Resistance. He would be proud to accept any leadership role on her behalf. "Vice Admiral Holdo of the cruiser Ninka," Dacey said, and stepped back. The choice was such a surprise to Poe that he didn't know whether he felt crushed or grateful he wasn't picked. He had never met the Vice Admiral in person, but he had heard that she and General Organa had been friends since youth. He also knew she was recognized as a great strategic mind, admired even by Akbar. "Thank you, Commander." Dressed in a slender gown and neck wrap a few shades darker than her purple hair, Vice Admiral Amelyn Holdo bore herself with dignity and grace. "Look around you. There are 400 of you on 3 ships. We are the last of the Resistance, but we are not alone. In every corner of the galaxy, the downtrodden and oppressed know our symbol, and they put their hope in it. We are the spark that will light the fire that will restore the Republic. That spark, this Resistance, must survive. That is our mission." Her voice conveyed a quiet strength. Everyone on the bridge hung on to her words, including Poe. "To your stations, and may the Force be with us." Poe blinked. That was it? She hadn't given them any instructions, yet no one else seemed puzzled. Poe leaned over to Kai Thrinali, who was sitting next to him. "That's Admiral Holdo. Battle of Chiron Belt, Admiral Holdo." The Abed Nito mumbled an affirmative. "Not what I expected," Poe said. A great military strategist should have formulated something more than a speech. As the others disbanded, Poe approached Holdo and saluted.
"Vice Admiral, Commander Dameron, with our current fuel consumption, there's a very limited amount of time we can stay out of range of those destroyers."
"Very kind of you to make me aware."
"And we need to shake them before we find another base," he said. "What's our plan?"
She rebuffed him immediately. "Our plan, Captain? Not Commander, right? Wasn't it Leia's last official act to demote you? For your dreadnought plan where we lost our entire bomber fleet?"
"Captain, Commander, you can call me whatever you like. I just want to know what we're doing,"
Poe said. "Of course you do. I understand. I've dealt with plenty of trigger-happy flyboys like you. You're impulsive, dangerous, and the last thing we need right now." Holdo wasn't being sarcastic. She was being serious. Poe couldn't contain his shock.
"Leia put the Resistance in your hands? Do you even have a plan?"
"Captain Dameron, that is need-to-know information, and you do not need to know. Stick to your post and follow my orders." She turned her back to him and went to a console. Poe froze, unsure of what he should do. BB-8 rolled around him, trying to buoy his spirits, but he needed something more than reassuring beeps. He needed wisdom and advice. He needed General Organa. Chapter 9. Luke flipped up the hood of his cloak and slipped out of his hut. It was the dead of night. Ray snored on an outdoor bench, too deep in sleep to notice him. He ascended the hill, then crossed the island in the moonlight. Wookiee growls led him to the landing site of the Millennium Falcon. Chewbacca roasted his dinner outside the ship. He grabbed a spit from the campfire and brought the blackened slab on it to his lips. Before he bit into the meat, an uncooked member of its species, one of Octo's little avians, waddled up from a group and stared at him innocently. Chewbacca snarled, showing fangs, and the other avians around him shot in all directions, much faster than they appeared capable of moving. The Wookiee returned to eat his meal, but then dropped it with a guilty whine. Luke smiled as he walked up the Falcon's boarding ramp. Chewbacca's heart always won out over his hunger. The interior of the ship hadn't changed much since Luke's first trip off Tatooine in it. Grease stained the bulkheads. Loose plates rattled on the floor. Rust ate at the rungs of the turret ladder. Frayed wires spilled out of a wall socket. None of it concerned Luke. The Falcon wouldn't be the Falcon if it wasn't in a perpetual state of disrepair. In the cockpit, the pilot's seat still showed Han's contours, worn in from decades of use. Luke gripped its edge and looked out the canopy at the night sky. Gold six-sided chance cubes dangled from the canopy near Chewbacca's chair. Luke held them with his metal fingers, detecting an almost imperceptible weight on one side of the cubes that most certainly favored landing on the sixes. He entered the lounge where Obi-Wan Kenobi had trained him how to wield a lightsaber. The blast helmet he'd worn to cover his eyes while fighting the remote rested on a shelf, probably untouched since that test. The holographic chessboard, however, had seen much more recent use. Its console lights blinked for a saved game to be resumed. Luke sat down on the couch, remembering the moments he'd had on this ship. A series of gentle electronic beeps, more familiar to him than any other sound in the universe, told him he wasn't alone.
R2?
The silver-domed astromech unit wheeled out of a corner. Though the droid had a little rust around the edges, none of that stopped him from squealing at seeing Luke and venting disappointment that his old master had left him behind.
Yes, yes, I know.
But Luke's concession didn't stop the droid from blurting out binary Luke knew he had never programmed.
Hey! Sacred Island! Watch the language.
R2-D2 switched his vocabulary, but not the forceful tone of his beeps. The droid wanted Luke to return and help the Resistance.
Old friend, I'm doing what's best. Nothing can change my mind.
Luke touched the astromech's dome, as he had so many times in the past. It was a human gesture, but it usually had the effect of calming down the short-fused droid. R2-D2 quieted, as Luke had hoped he would. Yet in place of beeps, the droid projected a hologram. The same hologram he'd projected when Luke had first encountered the droid more than 40 years before on Tatooine. Luke's twin sister, Leia, leaned before him in miniature, making a silent plea. She was young in the image, barely 19, and wore the flowing robes of her status as Princess of Alderaan. Her mouth moved to words that Luke could never forget. Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope. Her words and her beauty had motivated his younger self to find the crazy old wizard in the deserts of Tatooine. As a consequence, that quest had saved him from the Imperial stormtroopers who burned his uncle and aunt to the bone. Luke frowned at R2-D2. The astromech knew him too well. He was trying to make Luke feel guilty for abandoning his friends.
That's a cheap move.
Cheap though it might be, it was working. For as Leia's image flickered before him, Luke remembered he was more than the last of the Jedi. He was also a brother. Finn lay on a repulsor lift cart, being pulled in fits and starts down the corridor. He tried to kick, but nothing happened. His leg wouldn't respond, and his wrists were in binders.
I can't move, he said. You stunned me. Help!
Rose glared down at him. I'm taking you to the brig and turning you in for desertion.
No,
he said. She had it all wrong. He had to make her understand he wasn't a deserter. He was just trying to warn Ray.
This fleet is doomed. If my friend comes back to it, she's doomed too.
Rose let go of the cart and crouched down to his level.
You're a selfish traitor.
Look, Finn said, his tongue able to move more freely now.
If I could save Ray by saving the Resistance fleet, I would. But I can't. Nobody can. We can't outrun the First Order fleet.
We can jump to light speed, she said.
They can track us through light speed.
Her suspicion turned into alarm.
They can track us through light speed? Yes! They'll just show up seconds later and we'd have blown a ton of fuel, which we're dangerously short on.
Finn started to wiggle his limbs. His paralysis was wearing off, but his jaw remained numb.
I can't feel my teeth. What did you shoot me with?
Rose ignored his question, lost in thought.
Active tracking, she said.
Hyperspace tracking is new tech, but the principle must be the same as any active tracker. I've done maintenance on active trackers. They're single source to avoid interference. So, Finn got the gist of what she was saying. If the First Order could operate only a single hyperspace tracker at a time, it would be installed on the most powerful vessel in the Armada, the Mega Destroyer.
They're only tracking us from the lead ship, they said at the same time.
He held up his bound wrists and gave her a beggar's smile. For a tense moment, her suspicion seemed to return, but then she keyed the code and unlocked the binders. Immediately, the pair went to work hatching a plan. Rose believed she could shut the tracker down if she could gain access to the power breaker room on the Mega Destroyer. Finn could lead her there. He knew the layout of the Supremacy by heart, having spent an entire training cycle with his trooper team mopping its floors. But they'd need a ship to transport them to the Mega Destroyer. Since Rose was only a maintenance tech, she couldn't fly a Resistance shuttle for her own use. Poe, however, would be able to get one for them. They found the pilot in General Organa's quarters, by her bedside with C-3PO and BB-8. The general lay in a coma as medical droids fussed about her, caring for her every need. Finn introduced Poe to Rose and pitched him their plan to sneak aboard the Supremacy and disable the tracker. Even a temporary pause in the tracker's operation would give the Resistance enough time to jump to light speed without being followed. BB-8 beeped his approval, but Poe was less persuaded.
Poe, Finn pleaded, this will save the fleet and save Rey. We have to do it.
Poe went over to General Organa on her bunk. He looked at her, touching her hand, as if to discern what she would advise.
If I must be the sole voice of reason, interjected C-3PO, Vice Admiral Holdo will never approve of this plan.
Poe's attitude suddenly changed.
You're right, 3PO. This plan is need to know, and she doesn't.
Oh dear, said the protocol droid.
Poe looked at Finn and Rose.
So, how do we sneak you onto a Star Destroyer?
We steal a First Order shuttle, Rose suggested.
No good, Poe said. We need clearance codes.
So we steal clearance codes, Rose said. Finn shook his head.
They're biohexacrypt and rescrambled every hour. It's impossible. Their security shields are airtight. We can't get through them undetected. Nobody can.
I'm sure somebody can, if there's money to be made, Poe said.
3PO, reach out to your droid contacts on Takodana and see if you can get a hold of Maz Kanata.
The droid scolded Poe that he shouldn't be unmasking a top-secret spy network among present low-ranking company, but complied with the request. Not long after, the three-dimensional form of the tiny smuggler with big goggles appeared on the room's holotransceiver. Armed with a blaster, Maz appeared to be engaged in a firefight, shooting at unseen enemies. Poe cut to the chase and asked her if she could get them clearance codes.
Of course I could do it, but I'm a little tied down right now. Union dispute. You don't want to hear about it. But lucky for you, there's exactly one guy I trust who can get you past that kind of security. A master code breaker. A soldier, freedom fighter, an ace pilot, a poet with a blaster, and the second best smuggler I've ever met.
Oh,
C-3PO exclaimed.
It sounds like this fellow can do everything.
Oh, yes, he can.
The way Maz said it, grinning and blinking her large eyes, reminded Finn of how she had flirted with Chewbacca when Han had taken them all to Takodana. It made Finn uncomfortable, and apparently Rose, too, from the grimace on her face. A blaster bolt zinged past Maz.
And he's sympathetic to the Resistance, she added. You'll find him at a high-stakes table in the casino in Canto Bight.
Canto Bight? But that's...
Poe stopped himself from elaborating further.
Maz, is there any way we can do this ourselves?
Maz fired back at her foes.
Sorry, kiddo. You want on that destroyer? You got one option. Find the Master Codebreaker. You'll know who he is by the red plum bloom he wears on his lapel.
Red plum what?
Finn asked. But the transmission cut out. Their mission settled, Finn reluctantly gave Poe the wrist beacon for safekeeping. He realized that rather than seeking Rey out, the best thing he could do to save her life, to save all their lives, was disable that tracker so the Resistance could escape the destroyers. Then Rey could follow the beacon back to the cruiser without the threat of being killed or captured. At least that was what Finn hoped. The sun had not yet risen on Ak-To when Luke returned to the village. But he did not go into his hut. He walked to the bench where Rey slept and waited. When her eyes opened, he spoke.
Tomorrow, at dawn, 3 lessons. I will teach you the ways of the Jedi and why they need to end. And when you understand, you will leave me alone on this island to die.
He turned away from her and entered his hut, closing the door. Now it was time for him to rest, so he could maintain the strength not to change his mind any more than he already had. Chapter 10
Stay here. I'll come back for you, sweetheart. I promise.
The Starfreighter's hatch closed, and its engines warmed. Rey tried to run toward it, but Unker Plutt's meaty hand held her back. No amount of squirming or wriggling would release her. She was only a small human child, while Plutt was an overweight, overgrown Krolut.
Come back! Rey shrieked at the ship. Come back!
Her cries caused Plutt to squeeze her arm so tightly it hurt. But that pain did not compare with the heartbreak of watching the freighter lift off. The ship roared toward Jakku's sun, never to come back as promised. Rey woke to the sunlight of another world. Dawn streamed through the doorway of the hut in which she'd taken shelter to escape the night's rain. Fortunately, the rain had ended, as had the nightmare of her parents abandoning her on Jakku. She blinked, and the after images of the bad dream faded away. This day was too important to let them disturb her. She had to have all her focus if she was going to learn the ways of the Jedi. Stretching her body, she slid off the stone bench and stepped toward the door, then stopped. She wasn't alone in the hut. The presence of someone she knew lurked in the shadows. A brooding, angry presence. Kylo Ren. She saw him, somehow, undergoing surgery. He winced as a droid pulled stitches from his face. She had cut him there during their fight, and she could feel the ache and sting of the wound, as if Ren had drawn her into his suffering. His pupils burned with hate. Instinctively, she drew the blaster Han Solo had given her and shot at the shadows. The energy bolt drilled a hole through the wall. Light poured inside, dispelling the darkness. Kylo Ren was nowhere in sight. Rey ran outside. To her relief, Kylo Ren didn't appear to be anywhere in the village, either. He'd just been another weird manifestation of this weird island. A ghost. Or maybe not, as he materialized before her again. This time she could clearly see his mane of hair, his scarred face, his dark eyes. He gestured at her and said,
"You will bring Luke Skywalker to me."
She almost laughed. Did this murderer think she would obey him? Did he think he could